You're listening to the Pinto and White Shadow Show on KFGO.com and 740thefan.com.
Hello, everybody. Feel that? Vitamin C in graduation. Congratulations to all the graduates, college and high school alike out there. You're listening to the Pinto and White Shadow Show podcast.
Just for the record, I didn't condone his choice of this song. I just want to make sure that's on the record.
He rarely does. The 044, the 044 podcast of the Pinto and White Shadow Show on KFGO.com and 740thefan.com. Wait. Don't lie to me. You shed a tear to this. You sat in your Taurus back in high school, sat and cried to this song before you.
We didn't play this song at our high school graduation.
You didn't?
No.
Nah, I don't think we did either.
I think we played. I remember playing "The Reason" by Hoobastank.
Really?
During the slideshow. That's the song that I remember.
The Reason?
The Reason by Who? Yeah.
Okay, so that song is a. It's a love song. Hey, God.
I that's the only thing I remember.
This is, I mean.
Yeah.
Which, okay, for the sake of argument, the Time of Our Lives song by Green Day is a breakup
yes.
song as well, but they yeah. play it for graduation. But this?
That's what I remember. Yep. By the way, as you were bringing stuff up, I see Hot Chili Ray up there.
Oh, yeah.
Going to see them at Ribfest on Wednesday.
Oh, they're at Ribfest?
Yeah. It was supposed to be the Wallflowers. And the Wallflowers canceled. Hot Chili Ray is playing Wednesday night.
This Wednesday?
This Wednesday, 2 days from now. We're recording this on Monday night.
Wow. That I'm actually kind of impressed, and maybe I'll have to sneak out there, because I actually like some of their songs.
Yeah, I only know one of them.
Which is...
Tonight, Tonight.
Tonight, Tonight, yeah. I Like It Like That is another one with New Boys, which I like.
Okay.
Wow, that's impressive.
Off, yeah.
Oh, okay, cool.
Now off the rails quickly here.
Yeah, well, I'm jacked up now about Hot Chili Ray.
I'm sorry.
Vitamin C and graduation. Yeah. Well, I mean, you had to play it. It's graduation week. It seems like all over the place. Everybody's graduating from here and there. You graduate from college like an eighth time, I think, is what happened with you.
I'll graduate from college again next year.
Okay, so your third time graduating from an institute of learning.
Well, yeah.
High school, college, and now. Oh, congratulations to you.
Don't congratulate me yet. Don't jinx it.
I feel like you'll make it. I have faith in you.
You have faith? Okay. Well,
yeah, anyways. Okay, so where can they find Brad Jones of White Shadow on Twitter?
Yeah, I am at the Bison Guy.
I'm at Pinto KFGO. Of course, like always, you can go on KFGO.com and leave a comment for us. Marcus from Mayville is absent from this week, as is Tyler from...
Tyler from Tupelo. Yeah, do we need to send out a search party for Marcus?
We might. He's usually pretty consistent, and considering this is the Before the NBA Finals podcast...
Yeah.
I figured he'd be all over us, be all over the comment section. But no, he's silent.
Mm, okay.
So we'll give him a pass.
If anybody sees Marcus, hit us up on Twitter. Let us know.
We'll let him know. I might send him a message here and say, hey, what the heck, we need your feedback. You are the guy who feeds back us and lets us know if we're doing a good job or not. I feel like our last podcast wasn't up to his standards.
That could be. I was coming back from Europe, so a little jet-lagged. So
yeah, you were a little jet-lagged. Yeah. I believe you said the Spurs in five.
You said the Spurs in seven, and we split.
Yeah, well, we did split because we weren't wrong about the Spurs.
By the way, can I go off on one more tangent here before we dive in?
Go.
Have you watched House of Cards?
Oh, yeah, both seasons.
I watched them in about a week and a half. I watched both seasons and just, oh, my gosh. That is a reason alone by itself to get Netflix.
So first episode of the second season.
Yeah.
How blown away were you?
Oh, my gosh. That was insane.
Okay, here's a spoiler alert for those who haven't watched House of Cards.
Yeah.
Kate Mara, I think, is the girl's name who plays... Zoe on the show.
Yep.
And
Barnes.
Oh my goodness. The scene where Kevin Spacey pushes her in front of the train. Didn't see it coming. I mean, I had no idea. I sat up out of my chair. I think I threw something at the wall. I'm pretty sure I did.
See, here's the thing. I kind of spoiled it a little bit for myself because I was trying to figure out what else I had seen Kate Mara in. So I IMDb'd and saw that she was only in 14 episodes.
Yeah, exactly. And you're going, there's 28 here.
Yeah, so I knew that, okay, something had to have happened. And then, but even knowing that something was coming, that was still a holy bleep moment.
What else is she in, by the way?
I don't remember.
I don't even know if it's right with Kate Mara. I have to check this out.
She was in Up in the Air with George Clooney.
Oh, she was? See, yes. I never saw that one. It looked really bad.
I did a long time ago. It was actually pretty good.
Really?
Generally, ones that are kind of the Oscar award winning, I'm apparently not smart enough. Maybe after I finish my master's, I'll be smart enough to get some of those.
Hey, but, keep going to school. And
yeah, but as of right now, beautiful woman,
I
don't get most of those. That one was actually really good, though. I thoroughly enjoyed Up in the Air.
Kate Mara, see, Up in the Air, and I'm not a huge George Clooney fan myself, so I don't know if I'd like it that much.
I love Clooney.
Oh, you do?
Yes.
See,
my favorite movie of all time is Ocean's 11, and yeah.
And see, I'm a huge Denzel Washington fan, and I refigured it out again when I watched Two Guns, a movie with him and Mark Wahlberg.
Okay, yeah.
And I just sat down because I had a weekend to watch a movie with violence in it because the fiance wasn't around. So I'm like, you know, I'm going to pop in this movie. I haven't seen it. Mark Wahlberg is, I mean, I can
you
stand him.
Yeah. You but, have a man crush on Marky Mark.
Yeah, well, you know.
Yeah. That's anyway, it's fine to admit it. That's fine to admit
yeah,
that.
Yeah, I'll admit it. So, but then Denzel Washington going, man, this movie didn't get a lot of publicity, but I really liked it. I love Denzel Washington. And then I was thinking the other day, I have to watch Training Day again.
I haven't seen it.
That's okay. I don't think Training Day, I mean, it won.
Training Day is a must-see.
Denzel Washington won an Academy Award for his acting in that, and Training Day is, it's okay that you haven't, but I'll give you a pass.
I need to get to that one. But the problem is I keep seeing it pop up on TV.
No,
and
you
can't watch it on TV.
You can't watch it. I will sit down with you and watch that thing again because I was in kind of knee going, man, I might. It was a rainy day this week. I'm going, if I have time, if I have like 2 hours to spare, I might sit down and watch this thing. Oh, it is so good. Okay. So we went off on that. You can find us on iTunes. You can find us at KFGO.com.
This is
044 Podcast. 044. We're into the summer months now, so our tangents are going to start to go crazy. Yeah.
We're coming up on a year, too.
We are coming up on a year, actually. Next month, it'll be our one-year anniversary, if you want to call it that.
Because we've only skipped, because 44, we've only skipped a couple. We haven't missed
We've went pretty hard at this, and I'm rather impressed by how hard we've got at this. We've got to figure out ways to expand the pot. We've stuck it out for a year.
Yep.
We might be able to, it looks like it has some staying power. We might have to figure out ways to expand this thing. The thing that you've gotten me into, though, is fantasy baseball.
Yeah.
Admittedly hated it going into this year, but you're like, we need another guy. Why don't you play? And I got absolutely the doors blown off me by you in fantasy baseball, like 0 to 10. And so I started checking out rosters and I started doing a little research trying to figure out what I was doing wrong. Well, I had way too many position players. Yeah. Everybody else is just piling up on pitchers. I have position players up the wazoo, so I got rid of all those. Retool my lineup.
I hate it when my wazoo is full of position players.
And I reconfigured everything, won a couple weeks in a row, and I'm starting to inch back into this, and you're just killing everybody.
I really am. The only week I've lost is the week that I was away in Europe.
Yeah, you've just dominated. By like 100 on everybody, and you have like 12 closers. I noticed
I have
on your
five
roster.
Closers on my team. Yeah, this is what I did last year. I had like six good starting pitchers. And then I just loaded up on closers, and that worked for me. My hitting, I kind of patched together a little bit, but I got lucky on a couple guys, cheap guys. Michael Brantley has been killing it this year.
Oh, yeah, he's been huge.
Albert Pujols, welcome back to the living.
Thank goodness.
Yeah, so I think there's only one person within 10 games of me.
Yeah, my season got really kind of dark there when Prince Fielder, he was a guy that I picked up like right away early on, and now he has the neck injury. He's done for the season. But I got Troy Tulowitzki.
Yeah, he's due for a DL stint here pretty quick.
Yeah,
trust me.
I know. Don't talk like that about
him.
I've
owned him. I know what's happening.
Don't say that. Picked up actually a couple outfielders. Brett Gardner has been doing well. Denard Span's been doing well. I got Rajay Davis.
Nobody cares about our fantasy league.
No, no one does, but I just felt like venting a little bit. So anyways, yes, you've got me into fantasy baseball. Okay. Also, when are we going to
call me
this?
When you're within 15 games.
Okay, wow. Now we're getting cocky. It's because you wore the red pants, red hat, white shirt to the
red
podcast.
Beard.
Oh, red beard as well.
Red beard.
When are we going to do this basketball thing?
Yeah, we need to do that soon.
We can do it. I mean, I was trying to figure out, how do we do this? Do we do four games at once, or do we do two one day and two another day? I mean, how do we figure it out?
Yeah, well, we're doing best of seven, right?
We are.
Yeah.
But, I mean, it might only take four for me to wipe the floor with you.
Oh, my gosh. as out of shape as I am, you're still toast, buddy.
Okay.
You're still toast.
Okay.
We need to figure this out. Maybe sometime this week.
I was thinking this weekend. Maybe down by the dam, down by the river.
Okay. We got to flip a coin for home court because we'll... We'll come to Courts Plus, my home court, and
do a couple there. Yep. So we may have to do two. Yeah, we'll flip a coin. If I had a coin on me, I used all my coins. I just got us two for one Butterfingers.
Ulysses.
Yeah, I know. That's please. stop right now with that. So anyways, yeah, we'll figure it out off the podcast. But what we're going to do, just to reiterate and remind you, is we're going to try and set up a one-on-one matchup now that the NBA Finals are on, and figure out who is the better basketball player, pick-up basketball player in one-on-one situations. I claim I am, of course, because I know I am, and Brad claims he is, the lefty over here.
Over under at 5.5 games, and I'm banging hard on five.
And we got to get the White Shadow's little brother, what would you call him, the pale shadow?
He's not pale.
Well, he not.
Tans.
I'll call him the... No, I won't call him that because I think you'd get it. Well, you know what? I don't care. Travis, the chunky shadow.
I love it.
We'll get him out and we'll make sure and have him referee. Although with that reference, I don't think I'm going to get a good.
Yeah.
I don't think it's going to be pretty one-sided with the referee. We'll decide that, see who's better. Who would you like to emulate? Would you like to be the Spurs? I feel like you should because of your advanced age.
Oh, wow.
Taking shots.
Okay, you're taking shots. That's fine. I'll take the Spurs.
Okay, Timmy D and the band, Old Man Riverwalk. I'll be the Miami Heat, three rings.
Specifically Birdman.
Absolutely. Guy used to play here for like a year in Fargo, so you have to be the Birdman.
Okay. I'll be excited to see your neck tattoo.
Yeah, I was going to say I'm about 1,000 tats short of his total. So... all that aside, we need to get into this thing, and we do have some things to talk about locally, actually, and that is where we are going to start with.
Local.
And what we're going to start with locally is we'll start with the NDSU baseball team, NCAA tournament. They end up making it, and their showing, I thought, was pretty good. Lost both games, and I thought that was kind of expected, but... the way they went about losing them, lost 2-1 to Oregon State. Actually had a lead against them early on in that game, but lost 2-1 to the number one overall seed, mind you. And then played UNLV the next day in the losers bracket and had a shot at the end of the game, bottom of the ninth, down 2-1 in that one, runners on second and third and two outs, and ended up grounded out. Lost that game. Brad, where would you put this showing, or if you, how do you feel about it? I guess.
They were the bottom seed coming into this tournament.
Absolutely bottom. Yep.
I mean, they were the absolute bottom.
Safe to assume.
The only reason they were there is because there's not a play-in game like the NCAA basketball tournament. And you know what? When you make the number one team in the country nervous and take them down to the wire, that's a really, really good showing for your team. I mean, and getting some, you know, they got some good TV time on ESPNU, and really, I thought made a great showing for NDSU baseball.
The one thing, too, about four seeds, how they break it down in the NCAA tournament when it comes to baseball, is they put you in regional sites.
Yep.
And instead of doing 1 through 16 like they do in basketball, they do it 1 through 4. 64 teams, that would be, what, 16 sites?
That's correct, yep.
And so, basically, you have 16 four seeds, 16 one seeds, or 8, I should say, ones, 8 fours. No, it is 16. Sorry, my math is awful. That wouldn't make sense, though.
Yeah, if you had 16 sites, you have 16 one seeds, one seed at each side.
Yeah, that makes sense. I'm losing my mind. Yep. Anyways, so 16 fours, 16 ones, and so NDSU being placed with the number one overall seed, do a little math, they're the worst team there. But the four seeds in the NCAA tournament in baseball did really well.
Yeah.
And they showed the graphic during the NDSU game. There was actually a couple, they place 8 seeds, essentially. Two of the 8 place seeds were out. I mean, they had already lost. They were out of the NCAA tournament. Number 2, Florida, was one of them. And so NDSU, while what they did was not outstanding, it kind of would get lost in the shuffle that they played the number one overall seed so well because all these other 4 seeds and regions were doing so well.
Yeah, and you know what? You got to build up to it a little bit.
You
usually do. You get a taste of it. Now this team has had a taste. Hopefully this will help Coach Brown with some recruiting. And you bring in the new guys and get ready to go. Now they've been there, done that. Let's take that next step.
They're going to get a sports bubble over Dakota Field.
Yep.
Which will help out with softball and baseball. And softball, the thing that they need to do is, okay, how do we get to that next level? We can win games in the NCAA tournament. How do we move on to the super regional?
And they've done that.
And they have, but at a consistent pace. Because I think that might be the next step. And you say that, and I see you give the kind of the shoulder shrug, like, well, maybe that's not possible. I think it is possible with the NDSU baseball or softball team.
Consistent pace to the super regionals is asking a lot. I mean, that's it, like it asking the NDSU basketball team to consistently get to the Sweet 16.
I think it's asking a lot. I think it's different. I think that's asking the NDSU basketball team to consistently get to the NCAA tournament. I think that the quality of athlete that the softball team recruits and that the fact that there isn't that much depth when it comes to the Summit League, their next step is to move on in national stuff when they get to the NCAA tournament. The way I look at it, and I'll explain it, is that they are and have been for years now the odds-on favorite to win the Summit League each year.
Yes.
Okay? We've established that. The recruiting pipeline, the way they put their team together, the way they play, good enough to win their tournament. Okay. Now, the next step for them, because they can get to the NCAA tournament, is to start win games there. And they've proven that they can do that. And maybe I'm jumping a step. Maybe consistently win games at the NCAA tournament.
Yeah.
But if that is your next step, then it's getting to the Super Regional. Because
I think if you're a school and coming out of the Summit League and you make it to the Super Regional once every even 10, 15 years, that's pretty good. I mean,
I understand where you're coming from because you don't want to get too... You don't want to get too high. You don't want to get your hopes way
up. I understand not wanting to just be content with where you're at.
Right.
I get where you're coming from with that. That, okay, here's what we've been doing. Now we've got to do more. But consistently, Super Regionals from Adi, there is a lot. I mean, I think the expectation should be to get to the tournament. And then, you know, if you can make it there enough, then at least, you know, every 5-10 years, you should make at least a little bit of noise.
So with that being said, the bubble, that'll help softball, and the hope is it'll help baseball, help these sports in the northern parts of the region to get some more consistency because they're not going to be playing at home that much. And then not only that, but you have to be able to pitch something to recruits because baseball recruits are going to go, how much am I going to be playing at home? Why would I go to school here? I'm just going to go to school in, you know, Florida, or I'm going to go to school in wherever, Nebraska even, because the weather's going to be a little bit better there. So you have to be able to make the pitch because – now you're going to see some of these recruits that maybe were on the fringe a little bit in Minnesota go, my chances of making the NCAA tournament may be a little better at NDSU. I'm playing on a pretty good team. I can play right away. Then with the University of Minnesota, where it's a deeper Big Ten, there's other teams that are starting to get better, Indiana, Nebraska. And so that'll be tough. Yeah.
And the Bison are going to have to do it quickly with Oral Roberts coming back in.
And Oral Roberts is going to be one of those things that you got to look at and go, that is our biggest challenge because – if you're getting recruited by Summit League teams, Summit League player might go, well, I'm just going to go to Oral Roberts. I can play year-round there. Yep. You know, where here I might not be able to get outside until March, April, whatever the chances may be. I thought it was a great showing.
Yeah,
I really did.
I agree.
And so there's nothing wrong with that. Congratulations to Todd Brown and the baseball team. 64th overall seed, and you really showed up to play. It was really good with a lot of guys, a lot of players from this area.
Yep.
And again, that's one thing with NDSU. It's not just football, but it's everything that they do. Softball probably excluded from that, but you're talking about Wisconsin, Minnesota, North Dakota, South Dakota, Iowa kids that make up the majority and the backbone of this recruiting department, and they win. So, you know, a lot of people say the athletes are in the South, and I might contest that, saying you got to look at the Midwest because if NDSU can do this on a consistent basis and win basketball, football, all these type of games – there's some talent here that these coaches are doing a good job of seeing. Speaking of talented teams, and I know it's the offseason when it comes to football, but Craig Haley of the Sports Network, he basically is the guy who runs FCS Media when it comes to a national scale. And FCS Media doesn't really have a national overreach when it comes to like Sports Illustrated. You know, they cover college football, ESPN, so on and so forth. But Craig Haley of the Sports Network, he is like the national media of FCS.
Sure.
He wrote an article saying why when preseason rankings start to come out, basically you probably won't see the three-time defending national champions as the number one preseason pick. And his points are valid. NDSU loses a lot of talent from last year's squad, 24 seniors. That's been well-documented. New coach, new quarterback. We get it. He also says Eastern Washington team that he feels might be one of those number ones returns the runner-up for the Walter Payton Award. They return the freshman offensive player of the year. Dynamic offense in Eastern Washington, they themselves might be up there as a favorite to win the national title. He also makes a case for Southeastern Louisiana and some Southland teams as well. I disagreed with Haley in the fact that I don't see NDSU not being a number one, and I think that they should.
How many negatives did you have in that sentence?
That would be a die.
At least two.
At least a couple.
There might have been more.
I do not see NDSU not being a number
one. That's also a double negative.
It isn't. Well, that's what I said. I'm just trying to reiterate.
So you see NDSU being number one?
Basically.
Okay, there you go.
Yeah, that would have been a cleaner sentence to say. Do you buy into that my take? And I haven't really described it or at least got into detail about it, but would you agree with that NDSU should be the number one preseason ranking?
I would have to do more homework. I don't spend a lot of my brain power thinking about preseason rankings.
Yeah, it's a little wishy-washy. I get it.
I'm kind of a meh, whatever.
What does it mean?
You know, especially when you've got a 24 team now, a 20 team tournament. It just really doesn't do a whole lot for me. It doesn't mean as much as maybe it does when you're looking at FCS football, when you're looking at, you know, BCS style, when you're looking at two teams. Then preseason can matter if you have teams going undefeated because it's generally you don't knock a team down that keeps winning. So I don't put a lot of stock in it. Here's the thing with it. I don't have a problem with most rankings when you're doing the polls, when you're doing those things. The point of it is to get an opinion. And if you can give me, here's reason X, Y, Z, and you can show that you've at least put some reasonable thought into it, I'm not going to have a problem either way. I can understand certainly giving NDSU the benefit of the doubt being the three-time champ and having a very talented team coming back despite losing all the players that they did. I understand giving them that kind of respect and saying, you know what, until you get knocked down a peg, we're going to keep you there. I get that. And I would assume that's probably your main argument is you're the top dog until somebody knocks you off the hill.
Yeah. And I don't see why you wouldn't be. The other part of it, too, is he mentions Eastern Washington, which I have a problem with right away. They probably have the number one offense in all of FCS, and they were one of the tops last year. But what has NDSU done to win so many games? Defense. Kept teams out of the end zone at an unbelievable pace, by the way.
But when you're looking at creating a poll, especially a preseason poll, it's all about how you look on paper. What happens on the field, you know, as strange as that sounds, is largely irrelevant. It's how do you look on paper? And when you've got the guys that you mentioned coming back, you look really, really good on paper. And that's really all we're talking about.
Well, on paper, I think NDSU defensively looks really, really good as well. They're going to pick out the fact that Grant Olson, a good chunk of the interior linemen for NDSU and Marcus Williams are gone. But you have to remember, the better defensive cornerback last year was CJ Smith. He returns.
I don't disagree, but again, when you're to go to his, if I'm going to take his side on this, then it's, you know what? How many people, we know who CJ Smith is. How many other people really know who CJ Smith is? People knew who Marcus Williams was. They may have even known Brian Shepherd more than they did CJ Smith.
And I understand that, but the people that do these rankings, do these preseason polls, are supposed to know who CJ Smith is and are supposed to understand that. Okay, Carlton, Littlejohn, and Travis Beck.
You're not that naive, are you?
Well, I'd have to believe.
Come on.
If you're going to do these rankings, do a little bit of research. I mean, go back. It takes a couple opens on your browser and go, okay, this guy did a pretty good season last year. I see the stats. A lot of these guys returning.
If you looked at the stats on CJ Smith, I mean, they're not going to be overwhelming.
And I get it. I mean, NDSU, the biggest thing that they hamper themselves with when it comes to these national awards and preseason rankings is that they're so balanced.
Yeah, and that's it. And you're looking at star power and you're looking at name recognition and, okay, I can point to this guy, this guy, this guy, this guy, and I can point to the fact that Grant Olson, Marcus Williams, Billy Turner, Brock Jensen, Sam Ogeri, I can point to all these guys that are gone. Okay. And so here's the thing, and this is really stupid because I'm arguing about preseason polls and one of my least favorite
things
to do.
I've suckered you into this.
You really did, and I kind of dislike both you and me for it is because I hate arguing about stuff like this because I find it really, really dumb. But I'm of the opinion that as long as you have some reason to back it up and you've shown that you put some thought into it, you can agree or disagree, but I'll at least respect you if you show that you can do that.
Oh, yeah. Okay, I'll buy that. You have to remember because this team defensively was so good.
Yeah, I remember.
Well,
I mean,
the second. Oh, I'm sorry. You hate that saying.
Yes, I do.
The first and second national championships, the offense wasn't the way they were in the third one. I mean, the reason NDSU was so dominant, the balance on offense, and that Brock Jensen was much more consistent, much better than he played his sophomore
and
junior
years. Here's the argument that you can make on either side, and it depends on which side you want to take up. Do you want to give the respect for the three national titles, or do you want to, you know what, none of that matters anymore. I'm strictly going to look at what I think is going to happen next season, who I think are the most talented teams, and go from there.
And if
that's the lens that he's going to look through,
and I think
then
that's what he is.
He can make an argument for Eastern Washington.
He makes a decent argument.
You disagree with it. That's fine. I don't have strong feelings either way.
You and your preseason feelings.
No, and I don't care.
That's kind of how you feel about preseason rankings.
Thank you.
Figured I'd throw it out there because...
Because you like to get people up all hot and bothered and start arguing with people.
And I think any ESU fans would feel a little bit kind of, you know, what about us? We should be the number one team in the nation because of what we've proved and what's coming back.
Can ESU really say what about us anymore? Should we really still be playing that card?
You know that's what coaches are going to use this year when it comes to chip on the show. That's going to be a motivating factor, and you know it because you can already see it in the locker room. We lost 24 seniors. That's all anybody can talk about. It's like you guys didn't even play last year. Newsflash, you did, and you played pretty dang well. Here you go. There's your chip on your shoulder. That's what coaches use for motivation.
I'll buy that. It already
started, and you know it did, because when I talked to Christian Dudzik before the spring game, I made mention of that. Said, you know, how do you guys feel about maybe not being perceived as good of a team as you were last year because of all the people you lost? And he kind of fired back and said, well, that's other people's perception. You know, we know how good we are. We think we can still win a national title. And I'm paraphrasing here. I'm not quoting directly. But essentially, that's kind of the vein of thinking.
And that's what they should have.
And it is how they should feel. But again, you're going to get a lot of people. And I'll say it myself. I don't know if a national title is going to happen. They're going to be pretty dang good. They might be one of the last four teams in the nation when it comes to the playoffs. But I don't know if a four-peat is going to happen.
Okay, let's hold off on that a little bit. Come on.
I mean,
come on. No, I'm not biting on that one. You got me once. You're not getting me again.
Okay. You sure?
I'm sure.
Because I'm about to move on to the next topic.
Hit the button.
You don't want to. Okay.
Hit the button.
Regional.
We'll move on to regional. And a couple of the questions that I have, we actually have the Twins included in this, who are losing to the Brewers tonight against a former Minnesota Twin, Matt Garza. But we'll get into that later. What is more frustrating to you as a fan? Put yourself in a fan's shoes. Joe Mauer struggles at the plate, and they've been mighty so far this season. Or the fact that the Twins' center field position specifically is such a train wreck with Aaron Hicks, that it's so bad that they've taken a career infielder and have put him out in center field on a pretty regular basis so far this season.
Here's the thing. With Joe Mauer, ever since he got paid, people have been Twins fans.
Strike cash only.
Don't like that. They don't like seeing these guys that all of a sudden are making millions and millions and millions of dollars. As the public perception on him changed almost overnight once he signed that contract. Do you know what Joe Mauer's career batting average is?
320.
321. Do you know what his career batting average with runners in scoring position
is? I've seen it so much. It's got to be a 332.
328.
328?
I mean, you know what? He's slumping this year. It's going to happen. It happens with everybody. And you know what? And he's responded to it well. What was his quote when the Twins fans were booing him? He said, "You've seen how I'm hitting with runners in scoring positions. I'd boo me too." That's what you want your guy to say. That's exactly the response that you want to have. And I don't get the feeling that he doesn't care. That would be the thing that would bother me more. You know what? With the kind of track record that he has, I'm going to give him a pass on a month and a half, and trust that at the end of the season, his numbers are going to be there.
It, to me, as a fan, watching Joe Mauer struggle, you're right. It is what it is. He's going to struggle. He's going to have his times, and it really does stink right now because he's struggling in big spots. He struggled in big spots against Texas, struggled in big spots against the Yankees. And I think today he's just finally starting to come around. I'm trying to pull up the stats quick as we're on air. Tonight against the Brewers, I think he had a couple doubles already today. So, he's coming around in that sense. But even so, the question was, what's more frustrating as a fan? You're right. You hit it on that. You can stomach it because the guy's a 321 career hitter, 328 with runners in scoring position. He's been in the league 10 years.
Making rap tunes.
Those
ever since Honeys was wearing Sassoon.
He's going to come around and do better when it comes to hitting. three for four tonight. So you can already see it happening. He's going to bust out of his slump, and he's going to be a 300 hitter, and that's just how it's going to be.
Yep.
The thing that frustrates me so much about the center field bit maybe is the fact that the Twins not only traded away two good center fielders last year in Ben Revere and Denard Span, we haven't seen the product back on the field for what they traded for in Vance Worley and Trevor May and Alex Meyer yet. So that's frustrating. And then you got a guy like Aaron Hicks who was kind of pitched as the stopgap and a very talented stopgap between what we had in Revere and Span and Hunter and all those and Byron Buxton, who's so young, he's just a pup down in the minors, and he's just been awful. But yet, they keep trotting him out there. He's gotten so bad, he's abandoned switch hitting. He's decided, I'm just going to hit from the right side now. I'm so bad hitting left-handed. Been doing it since I was 12, but I'm going to go ahead and get rid of this. Got to the major league level, the top-tier level of baseball, being a switch hitter, but I'm going to go ahead and abandon this against the best pitching the best pitch in the world has to offer. I'm going to go ahead and abandon that. The guy's a head case, and he needs to go. But the Twins refuse to let him go. They refuse to just cut ties with them. And the other part that's also frustrating about this is you look over at Milwaukee, and what do they have?
Carlos Gomez.
Carlos Gomez, the guy the Twins got in a trade with Yoan Santana, their two-time Cy Young award-winning pitcher. They traded away for Carlos Gomez, who's supposed to be the future, and because they didn't have enough patience with him, he did show the talent. He actually showed he had some power. He actually showed he had some average. They got rid of him. And now look at him.
Okay.
That is why the Aaron Hicks thing is so frustrating to me.
Okay, so you're saying that they should have showed more patience with Gomez and
yes.
They shouldn't show patience with Hicks.
Yes.
Okay.
Because Gomez and Hicks are two different situations.
Okay.
Gomez was a guy they traded the farm for, essentially, when it comes to Yoan Santana. That was the guy. That was the premier pitcher for the Minnesota Twins, and they needed to get rid of him because they knew, or at least they felt, that they weren't going to be able to re-sign him.
Yep.
You have to get product. You have to get something in return for someone that good. Carlos Gomez was the key player in that trade. He was going to be the payoff for them in that trade.
Phil Humber was thought pretty highly of as well.
Oh, please.
He didn't turn out well. I'm just saying that.
So Carlos Gomez was one of these guys you had to look at and go, we have to show some patience in him. Even if you knew you had Denard Span as a leadoff hitter coming up through the ranks, you could have just said, all right, Carlos, we're sticking with you because we made this trade and we can't look bad and we're going to figure this out. They're there. The tools are there. And Carlos Gomez never lacked confidence. He never did. That's another part. You have to think of the mental makeup of these guys. When you have a Major League Baseball player questioning if he should even be hitting a certain way, even though he's been doing it since youth, that's a problem.
Okay. What do you know what Carlos Gomez hit in his two seasons with the...
240?
He hit 258 in his first year, and he hit 229. 258's not good. And
How old was he when he was hitting 258, and how long was his major league service for when he was hitting 258?
He was 22, and he played 153 games.
Okay. I'm fine with 258 at 153 games.
Okay. Age 23, 137 games. 229.
He was hurt for part of that.
Still 137 games.
No, I understand.
229 with a 287 on base percentage. And he acted like a knucklehead. Twins fans didn't do well. Twins fans did not talk about, oh my gosh, we got rid of Carlos Gomez.
No, they didn't.
His first 3 years that he was away from it. At age 28, now finally, 27 and 28. Now it's, oh my gosh, what in the world were they thinking? They look pretty smart his first 3 years.
How did he do his first 3 years?
In Milwaukee. First 3 years, 247, 225, 260, had only one season where he played more than 100 games. Okay? So we're talking massive, massive hindsight. Because had he played at that level and the Twins had stuck with him, we'd have been having the exact same conversation.
About Denard Span and Ben Revere and why didn't they get rid of Gomez so these guys could play.
Exactly right.
I
hate playing that hindsight game when the numbers back up that, you know what? What they did was probably right because there was no way they could have had the same patience for the next 3 years.
Right away and in hindsight.
It's not like right away for a half a season.
It was 3 years after.
3 years, and it was that fourth year away where he finally became something. If you're going to have this discussion with Aaron Hicks that they should cut ties with him after, what, less than a year and a half that he's been the guy, the savior or whatever in center field.
Right.
I mean, you know what? You can talk about the situation was different because of the trade all along. To me, that's a bunch of garbage. It's you got to look at the player. It's the you know what? We have a center fielder. What's going to be our strategy with this player, regardless of how we got him? Because if they'd have played him for 5 years at the level that he was on for the five seasons that he played, I mean, how the trade would have looked like an even more of a bust.
Well, it wouldn't have looked that bad because Johan Santana, since the trade, how has he done?
That's okay. That's fine. That's and he got hurt, and that's
so the Johan Santana bit, it softens the blow a little bit. I think more sure. Also annoying to
but
compound
you're the one,
on the
you're
Gomez
the one that brought that reason up.
Oh no,
so.
I understand, and I'll still stick with it because I get that you can't. I understand that the 3 years after the trade, he really wasn't that good, and he was injured a lot, and now he's doing good, and it does look bad for the Twins, but I think it still looks bad for him because it's frustrating now. Because what you see with the center field situation. And how bad it's been, and how nice it would be to have an all-star type of player that the Twins haven't had.
But, okay, you're going to look into some magic crystal ball, and who knew that was going to happen? Everybody was saying, you know what, get rid of Gomez. This kid's a knucklehead. He's yelling at players. He doesn't play.
I never said get rid of Gomez.
Stop it. You were doing the same thing that you were with Aaron Hicks. You are with Aaron Hicks now. Get rid of him. This guy's a bum. He's, you know, his numbers, he's running into outs, and he just, you know, he can't hit. He can't get on base. He didn't get above a 300 on-base percentage until his third year away. He got 305 on-base percentage, and he was going to be your leadoff guy.
Right.
I mean, I'm sorry. That's you can't just say, oh, my gosh, now 5 years later that he finally developed. Man, the Twins really whiffed on that. It looked like for the last 4 years that the Twins cut ties at exactly the right time and that it just wasn't going to work out.
I got nothing. I think you stonewalled me there.
What in the world is up?
Yeah, that's if we were keeping points here, you would just be dings all around. Very nice. Well put. I got put in my place with that one. In retrospect, I was wrong for bringing up Carlos Gomez.
So, and you know what? They're both frustrating right now. Both Mauer and
the center field situation.
They are both frustrating as fans, especially because the Twins team's been a little feistier than what we thought they would be.
Than
I thought. You thought they were going to be better than I did. So
yes.
you were right on that sense. But it's frustrating when, oh man, if these two things can get straightened out. You know what? Maybe this team is going to be in a wild card contention in an AL Central that's been kind of meh.
And the AL Central has been meh, and the Twins' pitching has been
better than a little above average outside of Correa.
Oh, gosh, so bad. That's going to be a conversation because from what I'm seeing in the minor leagues, you're seeing guys like Trevor May and. Yeah.
And here's the thing, and maybe with Aaron Hicks, you know what, maybe he just needed a little more time. Maybe they brought him up a little early. It could be something as simple as that.
It could be. Maybe they do need to show more patience. Of course, that's why I'm barking about it on a podcast in Fargo, and they're making the decisions. The pitching situation with Kevin Correa and Mike Pelfrey is going to come to a head, I think, this season because the way Trevor May and Alex Meyer have thrown in the minors from what I'm seeing and what I'm hearing and what I'm reading – they're making a case seriously for this year to get up called to the major leagues.
And the longer they stick around in a playoff race, the harder it's going to be to keep them down.
Well, not only that, I think the longer that those two struggle, Pelfrey and Correa, because those guys were two of the best products from the trades with Ben Revere and Denard Span. Those were two guys that they looked at and went, all right, we can use these guys in a little bit of time here.
Yeah.
And it comes down to contracts and MLB service
and
stuff like that.
And that's the thing that I don't fully understand, and I'm not going to pretend. I'd have to do a lot more research to say, okay, before I'd be able to give my opinion of here's the time, the best
time
to
do it. Up. Yep.
But you got to consider all those things. And
because you want.
But if those guys are still flamethrowing and they're still, you know, tearing it up in the minors, and the longer you hang around in that playoff race, if you've got a weak link or two in that starting rotation – that's when it gets to be real tough to say, to heck with that, man. We can make the playoffs this year. Let's bring out all the guns. Let's go for it. It's a dangerous way to think.
It is.
And GMs are paid not to get trapped by that.
Right.
But it gets really, really tempting because it's a lot easier to save your job when you're making the playoffs rather than when you're saying, no, trust us, this was the right move for 5 years from now.
And the thing is, too, you have to remember there's arbitration that they deal with where a player can go, you know, I'm not getting paid what I deserve. And your fear as a GM is to go, one, I can't have all these guys be paid at the same time because I just don't have the budget for that. Two, I need to balance it out where I can pay this guy, this guy, and this guy and keep them all around for a little bit longer than that. But then the other thing is, too, is that you want to make sure you have them all on the same team at the same time before payday comes so you can get to the playoffs a couple, two, three, four, hopefully, times in a row. And the Twins are hoping that those two pitchers, along with Kyle Gibson and the way Phil Hughes and Ricky Nolasco have been throwing, that makes up a starting rotation for a few years that they can go, all right, here we go. Insert Sano, insert Buxton, insert Arcia, insert Danny Santana, and then this team becomes much better offensively because that's their biggest deficiency. But it becomes a guessing game, and you're right. I think the really tough thing is going to go if Detroit all of a sudden starts to struggle and the Twins all of a sudden start winning series. I don't think they're going to go on an incredible winning streak, but they start winning series and go, man, they've won 14 out of their last 21 games. I don't know what's going on here. We're like three games out of this, and then you have to consider now, too, you have that extra wild card.
Yep.
You have that extra wild card, so you don't, it just, you know, that becomes tough to.
And after a handful of years, too, you know, as far as the target field being able to get them more money than what the Metrodome had, eventually you got to win something to get the fans coming out. Right now, Twins middle to bottom of the league as far as attendance goes. They sit 20th in attendance.
Yeah.
17th in terms of the percentage of the seats in the stadium sold. So eventually, you know, the appeal, the novelty of having the new stadium and having Target Field is going to wear off a little bit.
I think it hurt when Miguel Sano went down with Tommy John surgery because they looked at it this year as a couple things that they were banking on going in spring training and saying, all right, Trevor Plouffe looks good. I mean, he looks like he bulked up. He looks like he's going to be a better player. That's good because now he becomes trade bait for a team in the race and a guy who can hit doubles. And he's doing that too. He's hitting for extra bases. He's driving in some runs. He's showing some power. So he's trade bait. And the hope was, we'll trade him by August. We'll bring up Sano. Fans will go crazy because it's Miguel Sano.
Get his feet wet. Get him ready for a run next year.
And then Sano has the Tommy John surgery. Now your whole plan for 2014, or at least a good plan for 2014, goes, okay, now what? Yeah. Do we trade Plouffe and then that becomes hurt because now we just got rid of that product? The Twins are interesting in the fact that this is kind of the year where we're going, boy, they're on the cusp. They figured out some things. Some things get put into place. Let's see how this goes. So that's going to be the next question, is what they're starting pitching.
Yep.
And as well with Minnesota major sports teams and players leaving, players going, Kevin Love.
Yeah.
And the coaching situation with the Minnesota Timberwolves.
Your boss is lovely this time of
year. Yeah. Kevin Love spotted in Boston. Went to a Red Sox game and then went over to the greatest bar across the street from Fenway. And in possibly one of the dumbest articles I've ever read in the Boston Globe, some guy wrote a story, and I can't remember his name, and I should, because he got paid to write this. Some guy wrote a story based on accounts from the bar owner of the greatest bar. And it wasn't like, yeah, Kevin Love was hanging out with Boston Celtics brass and Rajon Rondo showed up and they were slamming him back and having a great time. It was, he seemed really interested in the history of the Boston Celtics, and he was a really big Larry Bird fan growing up. And I said, you have to have this DVD because it's the greatest Boston Celtics moments. I am serious when I say this. These are actual antidotes from what this guy was saying. Like, of course Kevin Love is going to be nice about Boston. He's in Boston. He's not going to go, yeah, Boston's an awful town. And he's smart enough to know, I could be playing here at some point. I could be traded here.
And you know what? If you like basketball, guess what? You might want to know about a place that has as good a basketball history as anywhere.
Exactly. So the whole article is based off what this guy said, and it almost sounds like he's taking what this bar owner, co-owner of a bar, by the way, he doesn't even fully own it, is taking this for fact that, oh man, this is a little bit of an inside dish, hot take that Kevin Love might be coming to Boston. The guy visited Boston to visit Boston. Now, again, you could read into it and go, well, maybe.
I didn't realize this was going to fire you up so much. I just kind of meant it as an offhanded joke. Well, my gosh.
That article is just so bad because I read it and go, this is, This is like talking to the kid who went to a house party with some college athletes, and the big-time recruit was with those college athletes and just hanging out. And you were talking football about him and telling him about the history of NDSU, and he was, yeah, okay, or the history of the school. And yeah, okay, that's cool. Yeah, that's awesome. I really, yeah, it's good stuff. Man, I've always been paying attention to this stuff. I played football, and so I get football, and I understand football, so of course I'm going to pay attention to that. Get out of my face. That's what I felt like this was. And the guy was like, okay. It's sorry.
Do you feel better?
Okay. A little bit better.
Take a drink of water there. Grab a drink. All right. Better? Wait. Well.
Yeah.
Okay. All right.
Better. So, be that as it may, what the future for the Minnesota Timberwolves is not going to include Kevin Love.
Nope.
I think we can agree with that.
Yes.
But where do you start if you're the Minnesota Timberwolves? Do you find it more important in your future to get a head coach or trade Kevin Love before the NBA draft?
Figure out the roster first.
So that would be trade Kevin
Love. Figure out the roster first.
And why is that more important?
Because here's the thing. As far as head coaches go, you're not going to be exactly real high on the list as far as getting the top coaches that are out there.
No.
The Los Angeles Lakers are looking for a head coach. Phil Jackson and the New York Knicks are looking for a head coach.
Hey, Derek Fisher just got done with the season.
Yeah, I know. But you're not exactly, if we're looking at the top coaching candidates, Minnesota's not real high on the list of places that a top-tier coach is going to look.
Right.
So, and always NBA, coaching matters. Greg Popovich has proven that. A lot of guys have proven that. But it's still a player-driven league. Figure out your roster.
I will argue with the fact that the only way you're going to be able to fill out a roster completely is if you have someone coaching the team and knowing who's going to coach the team. Because I think that you could get some players to come to the team if they know who the coach is. Kevin Martin, for example. And I mean, I'm just saying for the player's sake. He came to the Timberwolves because obviously they're going to offer him a good amount of money, maybe overpaid.
And he had a good relationship with Edelman.
And that was part of it.
Okay.
And so you need those players because if the hope for the Minnesota Timberwolves moving forward is we got to get rid of Love, which I still think they do. Some people argue that maybe he should stay on the team, get out of him what you can. Everybody in the Timberwolves organization is saying the good company line thing.
Okay.
In order to maybe fill out a roster and get the guys like a Shane Battier. Or a whatever. And I'm just saying veteran players that will fill the role. You have to have some kind of relationship with the coaching staff in order to recruit them.
And here's what I would argue. If you're a head coach, if you're George Karl, let's say, because if you're talking the veteran coaches that have a track record, he's probably the poster child as far as who's out there right now.
Yep.
If you're George Karl, what's going to be your first question when you go to interview for the job?
Who's on my team?
Hey, what are you going to do with Kevin Love? Who's going to be on my team?
Right.
You don't know? You know what? I think I'm good. I think I'm going to go look around a little bit. You know what? One more year of TV doesn't sound half bad.
Right. And I understand that.
You know, you got to do that. You saw that with because I think if you're going to look at an example of it, you look at Byron Scott with the Cleveland Cavaliers. Oh yeah, sure. I'm going to sign. You know what? You think LeBron's coming back? You're pretty sure? Yeah, you know what? Sign me up. Wait. LeBron's going to Miami? Oh. Bleep.
Right.
You know, so I mean, I don't know that you're going to really get one of those top tier guys until you've got the roster figured out. And if you don't have a plan as far as Kevin Love at this point, there's not a coach that's going to matter. And veteran players at this point aren't going to matter because this team's not competing next year.
Okay.
So you got to get the roster figured out. And then you try to find a coach that's going to fit that roster well.
So if we go this route with it, because at this point it does look like a one-year job, essentially, because they haven't traded Kevin Love yet.
Yeah.
And so if they don't trade Kevin Love, which is still a possibility.
Which is everything, whatever you can believe from NBA executives, that's what Flip Saunders says is going to happen, that they're not going to trade him.
Then it's a one-year job. And your job in 1 year with the Minnesota Timberwolves and the roster you're given
is to drag that carcass to the 8 seed.
Get in the playoffs right now.
Yep.
And that's your one thing, because you have to, you're basically going all in with the roster you have. And we saw what that roster did last year, and it wasn't good. And it was horribly inconsistent. So, for me, to get that veteran coach, that might be tough. Okay? So that takes away my argument of, well, what about the veteran players that can come and fill out a roster? Okay, fine. How about a young coach? How about a guy like a Brad Stevens type? And I'm not saying someone from college.
But I know what you mean.
But a young coach that
like
looks at
Brett
this.
Brett Brown, the guy who went to Philly from San Antonio.
Right.
You know, plucking a guy from a good staff.
Looking at this situation and going, all right, it's going to be rough, but I'm going to make this my team. I'm going to make this my roster, and I'm going to stick it out for a few years. And I think because, and only because, it's going to be easier to go down that route and get a coach that would be willing to come in and make those decisions and make it his team and understand the situation. That's why that, for the future of the team, needs to be done first before Kevin Love.
I disagree with you, though, because those coaches that are, if you're looking at a guy who's going to get his first shot, the young guy who's going to get his first shot, guess what? He's coming no matter what.
Okay? Regardless?
Regardless, because for that first coaching, for that first head coaching job, you take the job that you can get. You just do. You don't get real picky on that first job. If you do well in that first job, you can be picky on the next jobs.
Right.
You got to get that first job, though. And if that's the route they're going, and I think that's probably the route that they're going to end up going, get your roster figured out first, see what kind of team you have, and then find, and when you do your interviews, then be able to show the coach, okay, here's our roster. What are you going to do with this roster? And you go with the guy that has the best plan for what you have. But you can't say, all right, we're going to bring you in. What's your plan with Kevin Love? And then, but actually, we're going to hire you, but now we're going to trade Kevin Love in a week. You know, the interview then at that point is kind of, it doesn't really hold as much merit. You're not really interviewing the guy for the job that he's actually going to be doing. So figure out the roster first, find the coach that's going to run a system that's going to work best with those players.
What do you think will happen first?
I don't think I actually believe Flip Saunders that they're not going to trade Kevin Love before the draft, and I think it's the wrong move.
You and I both agree with that.
I think he's the type of guy who will walk away from that fifth year, that extra money. I think he will walk away from it because he's tired of losing. He's tired of hearing that Kevin Love can't get out of the first round, and he's going to say, well, fine. Same thing with LeBron. LeBron can't win a title. Okay, I'm going to go find some other people that can help me do that, and I think he'll do the exact same thing.
And I think he will, too. That's going to frustrate me, too, to watch that because it's bad management. It really is to look at this and go, well, we're not going to do anything with them because
it would have been one thing if you'd have gotten one of the top three picks in the lottery.
Right.
And you could put either Embiid, Parker, or Wiggins with him.
Right.
That changes things a little bit. And then I can
see them hanging on to him.
I can see the gamble at least, or the reason behind the gamble of, you know what? I'm going to gamble that this guy that we've got coming in is going to be good enough for Kevin to say, you know what? I actually might have. This might actually be the team that's going to give me a good shot at it, and maybe I stick it out for a little bit longer. Maybe I at least exercise that option.
Right.
I'll exercise that option and give it one more year, and at that point, that's a huge victory.
And it's probably better that they don't in the sense that they might have reached or went with someone that they felt was maybe more polished at that third or second pick because they would have had maybe 2 years with Love. Because in the end, maybe he wants to get out of Minnesota because
he doesn't like Minnesota.
Yeah.
Could be, because he's still upset that they didn't give him the full max contract. And
he's upset that they suck at drafting.
Yeah.
I mean, that might be part of it, too. Yeah. So then they go, we need somebody right now to keep Kevin Love around. Be that as it may, I think that, like you said, they're going to end up keeping Kevin Love. I hope they don't, but I think they will.
Yep.
And then it's going to end up being a coach that they'll get first before the draft. I mean, I would hope you can get a coach before the draft.
You'd like to get all
draft
of that
is at
done.
What, end of June?
Yeah, something like that. You'd like to get all of it done by then. You'd like to have your Kevin Love situation figured out, and you'd like to have your coaching situation figured out by then, because I think that is important when you're looking at the draft.
But national.
We'll move on to national, because sure. I think we've hammered that one into the ground. Some national topics out there. We'll do our NBA Finals preview here, probably to end the show, because we'll save it for the end. So I read
yes.
an article on ESPN.com about the unwritten rules of baseball.
Yeah.
Long article, but a good read if you have some time to sit down, about an hour or so.
Yeah, it is
a long article, but read it because it's really interesting.
It is good.
Brad, What unwritten rule in baseball do you find to be the most annoying? And when I say unwritten rules, I mean throwing at a batter because he pimped his homer too long, or throwing at someone because they stole a base, or just they're kind of odd.
I think it's different people's line, where exactly the line is as far as, you know, the pimping the home run thing. What exactly is it? You know what? If you take like a second, literally 1 second, to kind of stare at it and then go about your business, I don't have a problem with that. Granted, okay, I've never hit a home run, but you better believe I'd stare at it for a little bit too. So if it gets a little egregious, I mean, I still don't understand why people didn't plunk Sosa. I mean, after the hop that he had every time.
Yeah, no, I understand that.
You know, so it depends on where the pitcher draws that line. That's probably, just in general, it seemed like there would be occasions where the pitcher would plunk somebody just because they hit a home run off him. That one I never got. You hit a home run off me, I'm going to hit the next batter.
Right. Because you're mad.
Yeah, that one I never quite got. But it's just more so a lot where that line is.
I think one of the more annoying ones, and I think it's affected the game, well, maybe not to a great point, but at least stat-wise, is the whole don't steal bases when you're up a ton.
I get that. Because you even do that in slow pitch softball. If you're up 15 runs, you're not taking extra bases, and you know you're kind
of
going station to station.
No, I get that, but don't stop trying. See, with the hitting of the batter, that's not about the whole stop trying bit. I get that.
Yeah.
Some players have more pride and they get that, and it's whatever. But when you're telling a team to essentially, okay, you need to just stop trying. Single to center, you probably could score that. Just don't hustle.
That's another thing where it depends on where the line is. If you're up 7 runs in the 6th inning...
Oh, keep going.
Keep going. Absolutely. If you're up 12 runs in the 8th, okay, now it's a little bit different. If you're up, and I've seen it before. It's like 6th inning and you're up 6 or 7 runs.
Yeah. That's not over by any means. I get that.
I wouldn't think so. I mean, if you're upset that the other team is stealing a base on you because they're up 6 runs, that shows a lack of confidence in your own team.
My thing, I get it, but you think of football and coaches get upset about running up the score, but there's a difference between having a team, like in high school, you look at a team and go, okay, they're severely overmatched.
True. Yeah.
Okay, so we're not going to really rub it in because that's just rude. But when you're in the major leagues, everybody's as good as everybody else. Sure, there's a select few that are superstars, but you're all professionals. So if you don't like it, maybe you should have stopped it. That's how I take it.
Okay.
It's the same thing with running up the score in football. If you don't like it, stop it. I think back to when the Vikings were beating the crap out of the Cowboys in the playoffs, and Keith Brooking took offense to something. I don't know what it was, but it's like, dude, you just got your butt handed to you 34-6. I mean, they're a better team than you. If they want to show it, they sure can. That's why I have no problem with that. And to me, that's where I see, like, guys, and the game has changed a little bit, but Vince Coleman, for instance, he stole every time he was on the base.
Sure.
And my guess is, regardless of the score, because he knew he could, you know? And to me, that's where I see, I don't want to go score on a single to right field if there's some question or not whether I can score. I just want to go station to station. That's dumb. The pitcher should be good enough to not give up the hit. If the outfielder is good enough to throw you out, challenge him. That's how I see it. That's why that's the more annoying one to me.
That's a fair argument, and I don't have a great counterpoint to it. It's those borderline ones. Like I said, that would be what I'd love, absolutely love to hear in a press conference by a coach who they said they were upset about that. Oh, really? So he just said basically that he doesn't think his team can come
right
back from this. Oh,
good to know.
That's really got to be rough playing on a team whose coach doesn't have a lot of faith in him.
Yeah.
Now, I don't know that another manager would ever do that. I think I could see some players maybe
saying
I could see some people giving that soundbite, but really that's what you're saying, and I don't know how people don't quite draw the line. Oh, so you're telling me you're not good enough to come back? Gotcha.
Right.
I don't have a great argument against that. That's a fair point. I think there's a line, but if there's even a, well, you know, one grand slam and this is a close game.
Right.
You know what? Keep going, man.
Yeah.
I agree. Yeah, I'm with you.
Score until the game's over. That's how I tell clock read zero till the innings are done. Another question I put up here that has to do with the NHL this time. Stanley Cup finals have been set. It's going to be the Los Angeles Kings versus the New York Rangers. And I put out on Twitter today about how the NHL got what they wanted. The two biggest media markets in the United States in Los Angeles and New York. And hockey puckheads, I suppose you could call them out there,
yep,
ripped me and said, here are the ratings from the last whatever. And Chicago would have been the better team to have in. And the NHL would have rather had Chicago. Brad. Yep. Do you think the NHL got what they wanted with the LA New York Rangers
thing? Here's the thing. When you're posting about hockey, as a general rule, if people rip you about hockey, I'm going to side with the people ripping you.
It's probably a good general rule.
Yeah. And here's the thing. If they got the numbers to back it up, and in LA in June, there's a lot of great things to be able to do.
Like the beach?
That would be number one. Yeah. There's a lot of good-looking ladies with blonde hair.
At the beach.
At the beach. Not so much on ice. And so, you know, I really don't
have where are those great ladies at?
Yeah, I really don't have a, there you go. I really don't have a huge disagreement with your Twitter folks. Chicago, people are just kind of nuts in general in Chicago.
Right.
I can see them seeing better ratings. I see your point just on general face of it, but it's kind of one of those things where hockey LA, meh. Let's go Chicago. Chicago's not exactly, you know, it's not St. Louis.
Right. Yeah,
although actually St. Louis would be pretty good.
It would
be pretty
too,
passionate,
yep,
following with the Blues, but it's not Columbus.
Two things that I'll point out as to why I feel I'm right. One, because I'm always right. No, that's not it. But New York, LA, potential viewers. We know what you're going to get with Chicago. It's a rabid fan base. The Rangers themselves, New York, it's got a pretty passionate fan base as well.
Yep, yep.
But the potential, because things are trendy in Los Angeles. Oh, the Kings, they're in the Stanley Cup Finals? That's kind of cool. That's kind of trendy. I'll sit down and watch that. I like Los Angeles. I'll watch what's going on here. You have the potential, okay? There's that potential there, and I put it in italics because
okay,
it's a potential. The other part of it is, too, what is the biggest driver of sports media?
What is the biggest driver of sports media?
Or what media entity is the biggest driver of sports, I should say. Probably a better way to put it.
TV.
Well, okay. What media outlet?
ESPN.
Okay. ESPN has flagships, major broadcast studios where?
Right across the street from the Staples Center.
Yeah.
Okay.
Okay. ESPN, in my mind, is going to pay more attention to this series than they would Chicago, New York, because it has New York and L.A., and because ESPN's paying attention to it, more viewers and more sports fans, more fringe
more
hockey fans,
SportsCenter,
yes, are going to pay attention to
and
it.
And here's the thing. That
and I get
would,
it's the finals, so maybe, yeah, it doesn't matter and maybe I'm reaching, but that's kind of how I feel.
You'd like to do a lot of reaching, and that isn't the furthest reach that you've ever made.
Thank
that,
you.
Could I get more of a backhanded compliment?
Yeah,
that?
No, I
was about, that was the king of backhanded compliments there.
Oh, thank you.
But the argument that I would make is, guess what? There's, when you're looking at fringe fans, not a lot of fringe hockey fans. You're either in or you're out.
It's
and there's
true.
A lot more people in Chicago that are in than there are in LA. And so I would make the argument that that Chicago probably would have seen better ratings than what LA is. And when you say that, you know, there's the trendy thing, you're right. LA absolutely hops on to the trendy things. But then those hot girls are just going to wear, you know, going to wear a Kings jersey and tie it up. You
yeah.
Know? So,
know.
So that's what. Thank you. That's what you're going to see instead. I don't know that you're exactly going to. I'm not going to go sit down and watch the game.
Oh my! He's on fire.
Yeah, I'll maybe buy a shirt. Sure.
Yeah. No, I get that. I think the Chicago thing would have made for a better series, personally. Although
maybe
the Kings aren't bad.
I need to get
bad.
My girlfriend a hockey jersey.
That might be what
no,
you
I
need to do.
That,
yeah,
that,
it's not yeah. a bad idea. The Kings. The other thing too. The Kings franchise success is very limited. It's not as deep as the Blackhawks. And so
yep. You had Gretzky and
yeah. And they've been around. I looked yeah. it up. They've been around since like the early 60s.
And but Chicago's
one, I believe, with the original
six. I think
six.
They're one of the original six, yeah.
And of course, you know what you're going to get with the Rangers and the Madison Square Garden and all that bit. So yeah, I mean, but to me, I really look at that ESPN thing and go, that's what everybody watches. I mean,
okay.
You know, the people complain because
I can see
ESPN
it, I can
never
see it's
pays
easier
enough.
Is, oh, you know what? Let's haul Barry Melrose out to ESPN LA. I can see your point with that, but as far as the TV ratings of the actual game,
right? They're not on ESPN.
Exactly.
They're on other stations. So
yep, NBC.
Yeah, that makes sense. All right. Speaking of finals, the NBA finals are here. Love NBA finals talk. Love NBA finals action. Had to suffer through so many poor NBA finals when I was growing up, like the Lakers versus whoever the East spit out,
yeah.
The Nets, or, boy, I think the Nets
Pacers
were, or the Sixers were in there once.
Sixers were, it was Sixers, Nets, Pacers, I think, were the three.
Well,
LA
the Nets
ones.
Went back-to-back years.
But I think
Pistons,
I think they
got good at one point.
Pistons were 0-4. That was a pretty brutal series to watch. It was short, at least. But
and they ended up winning one, and then the Celtics got good. But it, be that as it may,
yeah.
We've had some bad series. Last year was one of the better ones, maybe of all time. I think Game 6 was probably one of the better Game 6s of all time.
Yes.
This is going to be fun. And I read a great article on Grantland today.
My boy Zach Lowe?
No, it actually wasn't. I can't remember the guy's name. But it talked about the transformation of the San Antonio Spurs roster and how they've gone from, you know, relying on the big three of Tim Duncan, Tony Parker, and Manu Ginobili. How did I say that? Ginobili.
Ginobili.
To relying on their role players to really come up with big-time plays. Patty Mills. Kawhi Leonard really isn't a role player, but he's starting to become more of a star.
You're talking about like the Foreign Legion article?
Yeah.
Kurt Goldsberry?
Yep. And so this series, I think, is going to be a very good matchup of deep, good roster versus best starting lineup in the game when it comes to those three.
And the best player in the
game. Oh, yeah.
Sorry, Kevin
it's
Durant.
Not even close.
Well, I wouldn't go that far. I wouldn't say it's not even close, but it's still LeBron. If it was a draft of who are you taking, one player for next season, I think you're still taking LeBron James.
To back it up a little bit, do you think Russell Westbrook hurt the Thunder in Game 6?
Here's the thing with Russell Westbrook. It's another. I'm going to go to Bill Simmons again because I enjoyed this. He did a piece a few years ago. Guys, he called 90-10 guys, where 90% of the time, you know what, these guys do great things, and they're just there's always going to be that 10% of things that they do that you're just going to have to live with. And Russell Westbrook is maybe your prototypical 90-10 guy, and it's you just know that there's going to be good and bad, but overall, the good outweighs the bad. And it's tough to watch, and it's tough to stomach, and it's tough to see him taking some of the shots that he does at some of the times that he does. And it's not aesthetically pleasing, but again, if you want to look at it for one game, yeah, he wasn't good. But
well, in the overtime, neither him or KD were good.
Yeah.
But I just look at there should be a rule that Scott Brooks has in place that says, all right, if we're in a close game, let's say what's within two and on either side and there's under 2 minutes to go, Russell, you cannot touch the ball. You cannot touch the ball.
Oh, I wouldn't go that far. I wouldn't say that. I would say, I don't think you can say that to your second best player, but I think you can say if it's that situation, Kevin Durant has to touch the ball. What happens from there, you know, if he may get something and Westbrook may end up with something, but You can't have those possessions where Russell Westbrook comes down and chucks a three up over two guys.
I think
KD has to touch the ball.
I think a better way to say that would be, Russell, you cannot bring the ball up the floor.
Just
Durant
has to touch the ball. That would be the rule. Because in those situations, you know, MJ's always going to be the standard bearer. He didn't always take the shot, but he had the ball in his hands. He touched the ball. LeBron James, he doesn't always take the shot, but the ball is in his hands. When the Mavs had the run with Nowitzki, he didn't always take the shot, but the ball was in his hands. You at least have to have the ball in your best player's hands. You can't go two or three possessions without Durant touching the ball.
And there was a stretch there in Game 6 where it happened.
Yep.
You know?
So that would be, anyway.
Okay, back to where we're at here, Spurs Heat. I have some questions here. I wrote up
questions.
A thing, and I'm just kind of trying not to. I'm like ignoring it completely.
You really are.
Heat Spurs. What individual matchup intrigues you the most?
here's the thing. It's a little bit tough because you know there's going to be some cross matchups, and you're not going to see Parker and Westbrook going at it on both ends. Because Parker's hurt one, and he's not a great defender either way. They're going to have somebody else
Parker,
on Westbrook. They're going to put
Westbrook.
They're going to put
Westbrook's not in the finals,
or excuse me, on Wade.
Right.
You're not going to have Parker against Wade both ways. You're not going to have Duncan versus James both ways. You're not going to see those matchups as much. The matchup I think that everyone's going to look for, I'm assuming that you're going to agree here, is probably going to be LeBron versus Kawhi Leonard.
Yeah. That's what I'm looking for.
I mean, I think that's the one that you're. It's a step down certainly from what we were all hoping with LeBron Durant, but I think that's the matchup.
Yeah, the NBA is.
You can argue a little less. Sorry to cut you off. A little less. Your second tier one is Ibaka and Duncan.
Well, Ibaka's not in it anymore.
Oh, why do I keep going back to?
I went back to the Western Conference Finals.
But to even Bosh Duncan.
Bosh Duncan. Yeah, and their games are a little bit different because Duncan's going to kind of hang down in the part of the lower part of the basket.
Yeah, so
Bosh is going to pop out.
Yeah.
But the NBA, like I was going to say, got a little hurt when Durant and the Thunder didn't make it because that's a marketing gold right there. Because
who would have thought that Oklahoma City being out hurt ratings?
Yeah.
Who would have ever thought?
And the NBA is different, though, because it really doesn't matter about the city. It matters more about the superstars. The LeBron-Leonard individual matchup is going to be intriguing because Leonard's offense since last year has improved.
Yeah.
He's got
Birdman Duncan.
Yeah, no, thank you.
That's going to be a matchup to watch.
He plays great defense. Yeah. So does LeBron.
Yep.
My curiosity will be piqued as to how aggressive LeBron will be with his offense
in the
first couple games.
And I haven't heard this anywhere yet, but my guess is by game 3 we're comparing Kawhi Leonard to Paul George last year.
You think so?
I think that's what's going to end up happening. If he has two out of three good games, you're going to see Paul George, Kawhi Leonard comparison strong. There's my prediction.
My hope is Parker's healthy for the series because I don't.
San Antonio
it's going to be
without him.
It's going to be really tough. It'll be really tough. And one thing that happened a lot last year was, towards the end of that series. You saw LeBron starting to get on Parker because Parker was just dominating, Mario Chalmers and Norris Cole or whoever was on him because he was just so fast. And he was such a difference maker in that series. If he's not 100% or at least 85%, I'll take that. The dynamic for the Spurs changes. Not saying they can't win a couple games, but their shot at winning that series goes down.
They're a Parker-driven team.
They are. And maybe not to the extent that they have been in years past, but it's still begins and ends with him. It really does. And Duncan taking that shot towards the end of game 6 in overtime to give him a 3-point lead, that's a Parker shot. Not that he would take that shot, but that's his situation.
Yep.
You know, he's getting into the lane.
The ball's in his hands.
Yeah.
He's the best player on the team. You put the ball in his hands.
And it's just unfortunate. So I hope he's healthy because that might be the matchup towards the end of the series that we're talking about. At some point, LeBron's going to have to get on to Parker. Leonard's got to force the offense in a way that he makes it important that LeBron sticks on him. Because if he does that, Parker's driving opportunity opens up. Next thing you know, the options are there.
Yeah.
The options are there for this team.
Yes.
Another question that I had was, what is the storyline you will be paying attention to most in this series? Let's give some out there.
Okay. I have mine.
Oh, okay. Go ahead.
I've got mine. Mine is going to be, no, regardless of what the outcome of this series is, do Pop and Duncan walk? I think that's your storyline.
Mm, I like that storyline.
Yep. Because you can make arguments either way if they win or lose. If you know what, they win, those two ride off into the sunset together with both of them with a hand on the Larry O'Brien trophy driving away.
Yeah.
And if they lose, it's, you know what, we just don't have it. It's time, and it's over, and we took our best shot, and we missed, so we're gone. I can see it both ways, but I think that's the storyline I'll be most interested to see is if they walk away in either way.
LeBron winning a third straight title would be one because it puts him in that
realm.
Michael did it.
Yep. It's like the Family Guy episode where a little dude ran around and kept yelling, Simpsons did it.
Right.
This is Michael did it every other turn. It's, Kobe has 5 titles. Michael had 6.
That's your only argument?
It's the
fans I need, yeah. Sean.
So.
Right. Because Jordan did it. Kobe did it. Now LeBron did it.
Yep.
I think that'll be a storyline that they'll get played up a little bit. But the storyline that I'm watching, because, again, you mentioned it, is Kawhi Leonard. How does he play in this series? Because as the Spurs transition away from Ginobili and Parker and Duncan, they're going to have to figure out a different identity. Because their roster, or not a different identity, but they're going to have to find the different player, the leader. Their roster is a collection of very good players that know their roles and play well on them, and Pop does a great job of putting them in those roles to succeed. Now, the reason they succeed is because you have Tim Duncan here, you have Tony Parker there, Ginobili's there. Those guys are not going to be around forever. And so Leonard looks to be the next guy to step up and go, all right, I'm the leader, I'm going to get you offensively, defensively, I'm going to set the tone, I'll let everybody else kind of fall in line. Is this the series that he steps up and makes some big shots? And could be.
And here's the thing. The San Antonio Spurs are not looking at all beyond the Tim Duncan era. Unless he's already told them that, you know what, the Tim Duncan era ends now. That doesn't even enter your mind. It shouldn't enter any fans' minds. You know what? We know that they're going to walk someday, and we'll deal with that when it happens. Right now, it's just, we have to look at this team in front of us. We kind of had the same conversation about the NDSU football team.
Right.
Who cares about this next year when you've got a title chance this year? Everything else goes out the window.
I want to live in a world that the Spurs are like this forever, just continues to go to the NBA Finals and everything else rises and falls around them and they just continue to be stable. It gives me hope.
Yeah.
I don't know why, but I want this world.
Like,
I want that world to exist forever. And Kawhi Leonard to me just seems like your prototypical Spurs guy, just a world of talent, but he just doesn't do what LeBron does or Paul George does or Chris Paul does or all these other stars, but he's so good and he's so consistent.
And he's so good at what he does. And that's, I'm going to go to Simmons one more time. And one of the things that he had talked about is the disease of more. And nobody on the Spurs has really had that.
No.
Where it's, you know what, okay, now I've done this, so now I need to step up and, okay, you know what, I played well, so now I need to start, give me 15 shots, 10 shots a game isn't going to do it for me. Nobody has that.
Right.
And that's, you know what, you can say, well, maybe he's not playing to his potential, but he's doing exactly what this particular team needs. And that's the kind of guy you want, kind of guy you got to have.
This is... really, and it was last year, the perfect series, because you look at the perfect team, and not only in basketball, but really when you look at franchises across major sports, the San Antonio Spurs are up there when it comes to how to run a franchise, much like the New England Patriots.
I would say better. I would say
no, I'm just kind of comparing across lines.
As far as what
the comparison is, the Spurs, are better because they've just done such a great job surviving since 1999 when what Duncan was drafted in 99 or 98, something like that.
97.
Since then, because 99 they won the title in the short season.
Yep.
Duncan and Robinson. You've just seen this team consistently be as good as possible.
And it's funny because, oh yeah, you know what? Popovich doesn't care about the regular season. All he cares about is his players getting, you know, healthy. He doesn't care about the regular season.
Well,
guess what seed they end up being every year?
One.
They basically end up being the one seed. They've been it for the last 3 years. Even the year that they got bounced in the first round by Memphis.
Yep.
They were the number one seed.
Right.
You know, I mean, that's pretty good for not caring about the regular season. They're just, it's consistent greatness.
And not only that, they talk about, well, they've rested their stars and they won't take them on here. Well, guess what? I mean, your NBA roster, and again, I don't understand why more NBA teams do this because they get so fixated on their best eight. But that roster is deep. I mean, that bench, I mean, they run out like 10 guys and they play them because they rested their stars, they rested their starters and said, all right, now it's your time. Go ahead and play. You wouldn't be on this roster if you weren't good enough to be on the roster, so play for me.
And it's interesting, too, because they talk a lot about the foreign guys that they have there and that Popovich loves guys that that come from overseas because they don't go through the AAU meatball that a lot of the great players now in the U.S. do, that they're on these traveling teams, and it's all about getting your stats and showing things for the scouts, and it's not about the team as much.
Right.
And so he loves the Tiago Splitters of the world. You know, you go up, you know, Parker, Ginobili, go up and down the list.
Yeah.
Those are the guys that he really, really likes.
But you know, LeBron was a product of the AAU ball, and
true. And I'm not saying there's none of them, but he type of player fits his system.
And LeBron's a one in a million.
And plays the way that the Spurs are going to play, that the Spurs want to play.
It's so fun because I look at this series almost like a comic book, and you have the superhero, the guy bigger than life, and LeBron James, and then you have, I don't want to call him the enemy, but almost this group.
Weird how they kind of take on that persona.
They do in a way.
Even though they're every single thing that we claim, and this is why it's so interesting, and there could be a great study done on this, I'm sure, but how we claim that they're everything that we want. You know what? We want a superstar who's unassuming and not making these grand claims in the media all the time. Check. Okay.
Right.
Guy who, you know what? We want a guy who focuses on the fundamentals. Check. We want a point guard who controls the game, who's willing to make the pass, always seems to make the right decision, and you know, doesn't shoot a lot of threes, drives to the bucket, makes plays for others. Okay, we can do that. We want a team, you know what, all this offense. You know what, we want toughness. We want defense. Okay, they're a little bit less so now. They were that before, but for a long time, yeah, let's check that box. You know what? We want a coach who's, you know what, going to draw up the great plays, and he's going to push all the right buttons. Okay, let's check that box too. And somehow, you know what, they're boring. You can't win. You know, you just, the perception, you just can't win.
People hate the NBA because it's all a me league, and they're not good. They don't play defense.
And in a lot of cases,
it's true, but
you know, there's it's a lot of a me league, but man, watch San Antonio for 82. You don't see any of that.
No.
You don't see, you know what, it's not about, you don't even see a whole lot of the after a great assist. You don't see the whole pointing of, oh, you know, great job, man. It's, okay, that's what we do. That's
wow.
Not, you know, that's not a reason to celebrate is a great assist or a great, you know, a great anything. It's not a reason to celebrate. That's expected. That's our job.
I think the storyline of Tim Duncan and Popovich maybe riding off into the sunset, if that comes to fruition, might be the best storyline.
And
who wins this series, and in how many games?
Man, I knew this was on the list.
Yes,
and I keep going back and forth and back and forth. As a general rule, I'm of the mindset of you pick the, when the team doesn't change after coming winning a title, you pick that team until somebody knocks them off.
Right.
And I'm picking the Heat, and I'm gonna say seven.
Seven.
Even though winning in San Antonio in a game seven would be really, really tough, I'm going to take Miami in seven.
I think Miami wins in six.
Okay.
I think we can go on, and we did about the San Antonio Spurs and how great
and
they
should.
Are. And we should. But again, LeBron James is, we're watching greatness is what we're watching right now. In our era, in our timeline, we're watching
a guy who is likely to, assuming health, and that's always the thing. I shouldn't say likely because I don't like it when people say, oh, he's on pace or he's going to. Well, everyone said that Ken Griffey Jr. was going to break the all-time home run record. And then, oh, but you know what? He's not going to. Alex Rodriguez is going to do it. And, oh, Albert Pujols is going to do it. Okay. There's a lot of guys that are going to do things and that it never ended up.
Right.
But, I mean, as durable as he's been, unless he unless he gets run into the ground, he's got a good chance to take aim at Kareem as far as the all-time scoring record. He's got a good chance to go down statistically as the best player of all time.
He does.
And
if health holds up.
If health holds up. And if he continues to add to those titles, how fun would it be to say, you know what? We got to see the best player in the history of basketball play out all right in front of our eyes.
From the beginning to the end.
From beginning to end. And for guys who are our age, that would be kind of a neat thing to be able to see.
You can consider it watching Babe Ruth in his prime, which I know is like, whoa, that seems kind of idiotic to say, but if he ends up doing some of the things that he's capable of doing, if he stays healthy, the greatest player that people think of in baseball history is Babe Ruth. Well, you're talking about possibly the greatest basketball player in basketball history. We caught Jordan towards the end, you know, James throughout the beginning to the prime to the end, and so on and so forth.
Kobe Bryant.
Kobe Bryant as well, although Kobe Bryant,
he's going to be a slight step down.
Yep.
But
I mean, that's very small. And
yep.
Be that as it may, it just what LeBron James does to teams, just him himself, is just, it's it's not going to happen for the Spurs. It's tough to put in words because I'm just thinking of that Pacers series.
And here's the thing, we still think that San Antonio is a little bit better than they were last year.
I think so, too. I feel like they are.
And we're not sure that the Heat are better than they were last year.
And that's how I feel about it, too. But
and San Antonio was a miracle tip back by Bosch and backpedaling three-point shot by Ray Allen.
Right.
They'd wheeled out the trophy.
Yep.
And they had started to rope off the crowd to present the trophy to the San Antonio Spurs. And then all of a sudden, just like that.
Right.
I mean, they were literally just a Tim Duncan layup away from winning the title. And we think the Spurs are better, and we think the Heat are worse, which is why I'm struggling with this.
Right. No, and I totally agree with you. It's my same mindset.
I keep thinking, man, I'm going to go be able to come back and listen to this podcast in 2 weeks and say, you gave exact reasons why you should have picked the Spurs when they're holding on that title, and yet I'm still going to pick LeBron and I'm still going to pick the Heat.
Yeah. LeBron has still this unbelievable, talent that he's able to take over games. That was one thing that they talked about when he's with the Cavs. Well, can he take over games? Can he finish the game?
Yeah, he
can finish, and he can take over games. And I see that because Kawhi Leonard can't stop him. Tim Duncan can't stop him. That's the thing, that Roy Hibbert was supposed to be the guy.
Yep.
He was supposed to be the guy that's going to stop the Heat. He's the Heat defender. Yeah, that didn't work out so well for the Pacers. Not too well. And the Spurs don't have that guy defensively. Nobody can stop LeBron. That's why I think the Heat win in six. It'll be fun. It'll be fun to watch. It always is, as is this podcast. Fun to do. We went way into overtime this night.
Which was good. We were probably due for that.
Yeah, we were probably due for a little bit of overtime. I got schooled on my baseball take. I feel a little bit burned about that. I'm going to have to go home and cry.
All right.
Next week, we'll do some more podcasts.
I at least gave you a backhanded compliment.
Yeah, yeah. You're the king of reaching. This reach I can understand, or whatever it was. Yeah, so I appreciate that. If you want to find Brad Jones, the White Shadow, on Twitter, he's
at the Bison Guy.
Find me at PintoKFGO. You can find us on iTunes, KFGO.com, 740thefan.com. I post this thing on Facebook. Friend or like the 740 The Fan or KFGO 790 Facebook pages. I'll put it on there. You can also email us, pinto.whiteshadow@gmail.com.
Tell a friend
to get on this podcast. About a year strong, so it's fun. We're six away from 50. We're doing well. Doing well here. So thank you again, Brad Jones, Dale Garson, saying thank you so much for listening to the podcast, and have a wonderful day or doing whatever it is you do for a living. I like